Chicken or beef?
Beef, please.
Chicken or beef?
Chicken.
There's so many companies offering fiber at the moment, but with Vox Telecom's premium high-speed fiber, you'll be joining the Smile High Club.
Duck or salmon, sir?
We call it business class fiber. We guarantee our uptime and can tailor our services to suit your needs and budget. Say hello to business class fiber from Vox Telecom. Visit voxtelecom.co.za for more information.
Welcome to the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. I'm here today with Dobek Putter at the offices of Africa Analysis. Dobek is MD of Africa Analysis. And he gave a presentation at the Free Market Foundation about a week ago, which I thought was very interesting. So I thought, let me come and have a chat with Dobek. He's done some very good research. His company's done some very good research on the controversial National Integrated ICT Policy White Paper, which is the policy document from government, which is really going to affect the telecommunications and the ICT industry more broadly, probably over the next decade. And Africa Analysis and Dobek have done some very good research into aspects of this policy and looking at some of the more contentious issues such as spectrum allocation, the wholesale open access wireless network, net neutrality. There are plenty of other things in the white paper, of course, that are good, and we can touch on those as well, Dobek. But thank you for your time today, and thanks for availing yourself to talk about this white paper, which is obviously very crucial to the ICT sector. So you made the point at the Free Market Foundation last week that this isn't all bad news in this white paper. I think a lot of the focus has been on the spectrum issue and the wholesale open access network. But there are things to like in this white paper as well. What are some of those aspects?
I mean, there are good points in the ICT policy white paper, and effectively it brings together various elements that have been discussed and in fact promulgated through the Electronic Communications Act over the past decade and more. It's just that a lot of them have never been brought to fruition in the local market for a few different reasons. So there are, the overall gist of it is good, and the intention is certainly good in trying to promote competition, decrease prices, make broadband services and broadband-based services a lot more readily available to the population of South Africa, to the economic environment in South Africa. Effectively, what the SA Connect program intends to achieve by 2020 and 2030. So there are various aspects such as providing a more open access environment, perhaps on network infrastructure, so there's less duplication, unnecessary duplication of infrastructure, although infrastructure competition is good in its own right as well. Things such as trying to possibly diversify the ICT space economically, and in general improve the quality, the deployment, speed of deployment of broadband infrastructure nationally, leading to over time greater competition, better quality of services, more affordable services. So the concept behind it, I think, is good, with good intentions. And as I said, there are a lot of elements that already have been present in various legislation, various regulations. It's just that never have been really either enforced or brought into the regulatory environment from a legislative environment by the market regulator. So this, the ICT white paper aims to bring all of these together and expedite the process. The problem with the ICT policy white paper is that there are some, number one, there are unknowns in terms of how to this is going to be executed, and the detail is lacking. So it's an overarching policy at this point in time. There is no indication at this point in time how that will be executed in just about all instances on all the different aspects of the policy. And perhaps that's because not much thought has been given to that. It's just thought has been given to what do we want to achieve and what do we want to broadly, how do we want to achieve it, but not how to, are we going to actually execute that achievement.
We've seen particular criticism on that score from the Internet Service Providers Association, yes. Which has broadly actually welcomed what's contained in here. We've seen a heavy criticism from the big incumbent telecommunications operators, but the Internet Service Providers Association has been a notable exception to that criticism in that they've broadly welcomed the white paper, but they have raised serious concerns about whether there's a capacity to actually implement a lot of what's contained in this document. Is that a concern that you share?
Correct. So, maybe to finish, the other problematic aspect with the ICT policy white papers are the two big, really game-changing, I think, developments that are being introduced into this policy. And one is spectrum allocation, particularly right. The 4G. The other one is development of a build-out of a national wireless open access network. Mm-hmm. So it's understandable that the ISPs, particularly the smaller ISPs, would find a lot of what's contained in the ICT policy white paper agreeable, because they effectively have been pushing over a period of time for greater openness in the market,
yes.
Greater competitiveness or enablement of competitiveness and competition at a, let's say, tier two, tier three level. And by that I mean four players who don't necessarily own their own infrastructure or only maybe own small pieces of that infrastructure, but certainly not nationally, oftentimes not internationally, and who want to be able to use the existing infrastructure from the large operators in the market and infrastructure owners and access it to be more competitive and develop themselves in offering services maybe to broader circles of the society and the business environment. On the other hand, the operators are the ones that are likely to be most impacted and impacted negatively, quite probably, through the ICT policy that is being proposed. So naturally, they would oppose large elements of it on two bases. One is that just what's being proposed goes against their strategies of how they want to continue competing in the market and perhaps how they want to retain and what format they want to see the ICT environment in South Africa retained, i.e. preserve the status quo as much as possible.
Right.
And on the other hand, there are the risk elements. So because of the lack of detail, it just means that the whole proposed policy becomes a lot more risky to them because they don't know how they will be involved exactly, what repercussions that may have exactly for them, whether they will be able to commit investment soundly in the future. And if not, all of that becomes a much riskier environment. Therefore, it sounds alarm bells. Mm.
Before we talk about the big operators and what the potential impact is for them, let's just look at the ISP market. And the government is clearly looking at that sector as a growth area and one it wants to empower to create more competition in the industry, which is clearly a cornerstone of this white paper. Do you think that the ISP industry is going to benefit in a big way from the policies that are contained in this white paper, particularly around, I'm thinking around spectrum, the wholesale open access network and open access obligations? Do you think that in the long term, the ISP industry will benefit from this white paper as it stands?
So if we look at the ISP environment, there are over 400 licensed service providers, most of them ISPs in the market, about maybe half of which is active. I don't know exactly how many. The market naturally would and has been, I think, tending towards consolidation, and that smaller ISPs, it's increasingly difficult to compete, particularly for the smaller ISPs in the market. They often have their niche customer groups and they're able to continue to exist by providing trusted services to that small group of customers, but increasingly they will be coming up against cost pressures. And they don't have the economies of scale to be competitive in a market such as South Africa, so they have to rely on their personal customer relationships and value-added services perhaps that they add to services that they sell or resell from the larger operators. And that's probably not if you look at the market longer term, that's not sustainable for most of them ultimately, particularly when infrastructure competition persists or continues to intensify with new technologies being brought to the market to build out future broadband infrastructure. So to create a more competitive environment and allow them to access that infrastructure at a lower cost, forced through by maybe legislation and regulation of the market, would be beneficial to the ISPs. I think open access networks would certainly be, particularly if we look at the fixed line environment, the wireline environment, whether it's copper cable or whether it's fiber, for instance, that they would be able to access more infrastructure to where the clients may be sitting at a lower cost. But having said that, the market itself has been tending in that direction over the past couple of few years, where more and more networks, particularly in the fiber market, have been open access networks to greater or lesser extent. There are various flavors. We've also seen a lot of pressure on OpenServe now, formerly Telkom, in terms of the copper infrastructure when we look at ADSL, for instance, services. And that to the point where OpenServe is now considering perhaps even providing naked DSL and doing away with the so-called line rental charges, which are mandatory at the moment, even though you don't use a voice service, just use the line for data communication. So the market is tending in that direction. So it will become more open, I think, naturally, to the smaller ISPs over time. But if it's forced through a regulation quicker, let's say, or within the same time frame, any of those would be good for the ISPs. It would allow them to be more competitive.
Sure.
When we look at the wireless environment, that ties in into what the government has in mind in terms of broadband, wireless broadband services and wireless broadband infrastructure going forward. So if the WOAN and the proposed wireless open access network is a success, I think it certainly would benefit ISPs because they would be able to access that infrastructure to an extent where they are not able to access it at the moment, currently, unless they build out their own wireless infrastructure. But I think that the real unknown lies in whether that network would be successful. Because if the network turns out not to be successful, i.e. there are problems in terms of pricing because it becomes a monopoly network over time, so its pricing is higher than anticipated. If there's problem with spectrum allocation or spectrum conflict or interference, any of those factors that can result from having a plethora of different small service providers within a fairly limited geographic area trying to deliver services to a handful of customers, you know, then it doesn't benefit anyone. And ultimately, the ISPs will lose out. I think we'll lose out as well.
Well, let's talk a bit about the WOAN or the Wholesale Open Access Network. Just for anyone who's listening to this podcast who doesn't have the background here, the white paper has proposed that there be a national wholesale open access network, or WOAN, and that all future so-called high-demand spectrum, in other words, 4G spectrum, right, will be reserved and allocated to this wholesale open access network to the exclusion of the incumbent operators unless they participate in that WOAN. So in effect, what the government is proposing is to create a new national monopoly infrastructure provider. Am I reading that correctly, Dobby?
I suppose your reading is as good as anyone's because there is no clear definition exactly what that structure will be like. But effectively, nationalization of the spectrum in the sense that it will no longer be allocated through licensing on an exclusive basis to private commercial operators for a period of 15 years. So what the system that we have currently in place, an operator such as MTN wants to deliver wireless mobile services, let's say 3G services, what we know now, well, just about everybody knows, so basic broadband. And apart from having two licenses, one is to be able to deploy physical infrastructure, the other to offer and provide services over that infrastructure. The third license they need to obtain from the market regulator, from ICASA, is a spectrum license, which actually allows them to operate a wireless network, to use radio frequency equipment in that network. And they would get that, they would pay a certain amount of money. Normally, it's not insignificant. And be able to secure a block of that spectrum for a period of 15 years, after which they can reapply for that. And normally, it would be automatically extended so they can continue providing those services, unless there's some real problem, as in they haven't been paying the money for the spectrum or something to that effect.
But there's even a suggestion in this white paper now that that spectrum, which they already have access to, they might have to hand it back, and so that it can be reallocated to the wholesale.
So what the government is proposing, as opposed to the current system, is that that licensing will no longer apply. All spectrum will be held in perpetuity by the government. Mm. And the government will make that spectrum available to and to facilitate the build out of a wireless network that will cover the entire country through and across which 4G or LTE services, as we know them, will be delivered. So it's a fast broadband services, which is the latest standardized technological or technology used mm. used for broadband services. How that structure will be ultimately deployed remains to be seen. Will the government be the sole owner of that infrastructure? It will certainly be the owner of spectrum as it is now, and it won't be licensing that spectrum. There won't be concessions to anybody else to use mm-hmm. that spectrum except the government. But the government will need funding to actually build that infrastructure. So they will go and ask the big operators, Vodacom, MTN, Telkom, Neotel, others, to contribute funds towards building out of that national network. Mm. And the funds we're talking about are not insignificant. They're likely to run into a couple hundred billion rands probably to start off with, and more thereafter to keep expanding the network and maintaining it.
The government, we know how tight the fiscal situation is yes. in South Africa. We have a weak economy. The government is struggling to raise revenue at the moment. Clearly, there isn't money available for the government to get involved in something like this. So presumably, they're going to be leaning very heavily, if they want this model to work, on the incumbent operators, companies like MTN and Vodacom, which last year spent 20 billion rand on CapEx. What happens if those companies say, well, actually, we don't want to be involved?
Well, that's the problem. One is that the government will need external funding from somewhere. Mm. Now, will those funders, Vodacom, MTN, etc., for instance, be shareholders in the network, or will they just contribute funds and be able to get some sort of preferential reduced rates in order to be able to use that network as opposed to those who haven't invested? Mm. That all of that detail hasn't been provided, so it's not clear at this point in time. Will they be able, on the basis of the funding they provide to this network, have decision-making power in terms of what technology is deployed to build that network? Where is it deployed, and what sequence across the country is it deployed? Mm. How quickly is it deployed? I mean, those are all pertinent questions to operators who now use who use infrastructure to deliver services, and to whom infrastructure-based competition is key to what they do, mm. apart from service-based competition. If they don't have any say, they just hand over the money and then have to queue up like everybody else to use that network, that's a big risk factor for them, and probably a factor that will dissuade them from investing in such a network. And as you said, if there is no money from the private sector, there is no network effectively, because government certainly doesn't have access to the type of funds, I think, over the period of time that they want to build out the network, next couple of few years. And then everybody loses out. So
we know MTN and Vodacom are opposed to this. They've stated publicly that they are not in favor of this idea of a wholesale open access network. So if they simply draw a line in the sand and say, we're not interested, we're not going to participate in this, is this whole concept in the white paper not just dead in the water as a matter of practice?
It very well could be, unless the government can source funding from third sources, banks, for instance, that are willing to put up that sort of money. Banks are quite interested in investing in ICT, but they obviously do everything on a risk-benefit basis. So if they feel that this is just a very risky undertaking, they will not put their money into that sort of development either. If the large operators, Vodacom, MTN in particular, decide, and Telkom decide, in fact, Cell C, all four of them decide that they're not going to participate in this network, they are currently delivering 4G services using the spectrum they already have, which is not considered to be high demand by the government at the moment. There are two scenarios that could unfold. So they would continue to provide 4G services, albeit not optimally, because they won't have access to the spectrum that they should be using for better quality 4G services, but they will continue to do so. One of two things could happen that are provided for in the ICT policy. The government can declare any spectrum to be high demand. So the government, at the moment, only the so-called 4G spectrum has been indicated, but the government could effectively declare any spectrum high demand. It could then go to MTN and Vodacom, etc., and indicate to them that the spectrum they are using for 3G and also 4G services is now considered high demand and they have the right to recover that spectrum. In fact, we take it away from the operators, put it into the big national pool, nationalize that spectrum, so to speak. So that obviously that would preclude them from offering further services, and they would need to come to some sort of agreement with the government, invest in a new network. The second potential scenario is that the government, which is also provided for in the policy proposed policy white paper, is that the government wants to relook at licensing of spectrum that is being used to deliver 4G services, but is not considered high demand. So effectively, what Vodacom, MTN are doing currently, and Cell C to an extent, reusing the 3G spectrum or the spectrum they use for 3G services to deliver 4G services. And they're doing it relatively successfully, but now the government will go to these entities and say, well, that's very nice, but you're using it for a service that it was the spectrum was not originally intended to be used for, namely 4G as opposed to 3G. You now owe us a lot of money for that specific spectrum as an additional fee. And no one knows what that quantum would be, whether it would be payable from the day of the proclamation, let's say today onwards, going forward, or whether it would be back payable to 2012 when Vodacom started offering those services and then MTN shortly thereafter, which could represent a lot of money to those operators that they would have to hand over to the government or to the regulator. So there are two ways in which the government could try and force the operators to participate in the national network. Apart from that, naturally, those operators need to evolve into the use of what's called now the high-demand spectrum, the 4G spectrum, because that's where the market is going. And if they want to provide more and better, more evolved services going forward, they need access to that spectrum. Over time, they also will look to discontinue 2G services, for instance. So the spectrum they have currently that they use for 2G services, 900 megahertz mainly, they would probably want to migrate out of that and to 4G services over time, just from a cost perspective and rationalization perspective.
Practically, if they choose not to get involved in the WoAN, they may be forced to do that much quicker than they maybe would have liked to get their customers off 2G so that they can reform that spectrum for broadband.
Exactly. So, you know, over time, they do want and probably need access to that spectrum. So they may be just forced by where the market's going from a technological perspective and cost efficiency perspective into joining that one big national network. So I think our perspective is that they'll try hard to negotiate with the government on how best to modify this proposed policy to suit both sides, not just the government agenda.
Now, one of the principles of this white paper appears to be that the government appears to be of the view that infrastructure competition and infrastructure duplication is a bad idea. Is that necessarily true?
Not in our view. So infrastructure competition is good from at least two perspectives, and it leads into infrastructure duplication. So let's say when we look at pure infrastructure-based competition, we're looking at the type of services that can be provided based on the technology that was deployed, and also on the quality and price of that of those products and services ultimately provided to the end users, the consumers and the business users. So operators currently, mobile operators, may choose different technologies to provide similar types of services. They will choose it on the basis of the technological roadmap. Where are they now? Where do they want to be 5 or 10 years from now? And how are they going to get there? And what types of products and services do they want to provide? And tied into, and then the technology that they deploy allows them to modify those products or shape them to an extent to suit their specific customer needs. It also has to do with pricing, where do they buy the technology from, which technology vendor, what sort of financial, how is the deal structured financially in terms of deployment of infrastructure, maintenance over time, payment of various fees that they continue to pay to equipment vendors, and so forth. It also translates into what sort of mobile phones and devices are available for the technology that they chose to deploy. And that also often dictates how big the addressable market is. Are those devices going to be coming down in price quickly or slowly, based on the technology they chose? If quickly, they can sell them to more people, make them available to increasingly markets, sectors of the market that have lower disposable income levels to also enjoy broadband services and be able to enter that market. So that's one aspect, technology which underlies then service product and service competition. The other aspect is if you only have a single national network, single infrastructure, that's a monopoly. And the tendency in monopolies, unfortunately, is towards aggressive behavior, arrogant behavior, and normally increase in prices because there is no competition to keep you in check as the operator in terms of your efficiencies, so reduction of your cost base, how efficiently do you run your network, and that translates to a large degree into what sort of prices are you going to charge on a wholesale or retail basis for the products and all services that you provide. When we have parallel infrastructure, duplication of infrastructure, that creates an element of competition. So now we've got two competitors who want to sell pretty much the same product, let's say bandwidth, on a network, and they will compete on price and they will compete on service delivery. How well do they service the customer? How quickly do they provide that bandwidth? What quality is it? Is it up all the time? Is it only up half the time? And that dictates in the success of the different competitors. Mm. So it's normally healthy to have at least two infrastructures duplicated in the market in order to retain the competitive element. And depending on that singular infrastructure, also often good to have two infrastructures from a point of view of failover. So there's always a backup in the market, so to speak. Technologically, it's fine just to have a single network infrastructure because failover provisions for part of the infrastructure failing are always made. So if link between Johannesburg and Pretoria goes down, for argument's sake, there's another link that goes maybe through Witbank back to from Johannesburg to Pretoria. So you never lose signal.
Yes.
But ultimately, all stops at the same entity that owns all of that infrastructure. Mm. If for whatever reason that entity fails, then that whole infrastructure fails.
And I suppose we've seen this time and again in this industry because, I mean, if you, I'm just thinking back to when was it? I think the mid early to mid 90s when we got digital satellite television in South Africa. The SABC went for an analog platform. MultiChoice took quite a brave decision at the time to go for a digital technology. I think it was based on MPEG-2 at the time.
Yes.
And that proved to, in hindsight, to be a huge success, and the SABC's analog satellite service failed. We've seen it, I suppose, with iBurst from Wireless Business Solutions. They decided to go for that particular technology instead of going for, say, a 3G or an LTE mobile type technology, and it hasn't proved as successful as the mobile operators have been with the GSM or the LTE system. So I suppose competition is important, in infrastructure competition is important in that operators won't always necessarily make the right decision for the long term, and you don't want the only company in the market, because it's taken a wrong decision, to then leave consumers having to use that technology because there's no alternative in the market while the rest of the world has gone on to something more successful.
Precisely. So that's the danger with having a single infrastructure or single WAN wireless open access network in the country. Number one is how will the decision be made as to who or as to which technology is acquired and built and the infrastructure is based on. And if you have a lot of investors in that entity, there's a big consortium, is it going to be and some sort of a consensus needs to be reached.
How do you agree in that environment?
Just that could delay things for a very long time until consensus is reached. What sort of technology are we actually going to invest in now and going forward? What sort of technology roadmap are we looking at in terms of 5 to 10 year development? If you do make the wrong decision, then you end up with two things. One is you're stuck with technology that the roadmap just terminates in a dead end and you need to switch to a new technology. If you persist with the technology, the users will be increasingly disadvantaged vis-a-vis the rest of the world, the more developed markets, and what can we do with that technology? And ultimately it translates into also our economic competitiveness as individuals and businesses. And then you reach a point where support and maintenance of that technology is no longer available because the vendor that sold you the technology ultimately moves on and says, well, I'm discontinuing providing upgrades or maintenance on that. Good luck. and then you're forced to go move over to, across to another technology.
As we're seeing with iBurst and WS right now.
Which leads to another point. If you have invested in the wrong technology, even though you decide or you have no choice and continue using it for the next 5 years, at some point the 100 or 200 billion rands that you sank into that needs to be re-spent on another technology which is a better option and which was not deployed to begin with. So effectively, all of that money that the government doesn't have and the operators decided to spend is a write-off. So you've used it for a few years, but effectively you can now write it off, and now you need to go through a process of putting together another money bag of a couple billion rands in order to deploy another network, active radio network, in order to be able to continue providing good quality competitive services. So that's the problem with having a single national network. Obviously, what we want to avoid as a country is unnecessary duplication or triplication of infrastructure. So, you know, if there are already two networks somewhere, or whether they're wireless or cable networks, you don't necessarily want a third one to be deployed because that doesn't necessarily enhance the competitive element, but it could be a waste of capital on unnecessary infrastructure. So your cost-benefit ratio changes and you gain less through an additional competitor or competitive infrastructure coming in, but you lose more through spending money that could be spent better elsewhere on other infrastructure. So that's the whole concept behind open access networks. And yes, we do want some limited element of competition at infrastructure level, even the basic one when it comes to ducts, let's say, or fiber. But we don't want five networks in the same place because that just becomes a wastage. So we want to regulate it to an extent.
Surely, Dobek, though, the market there will sort itself out. The operators will talk to each other and will avoid duplication where it makes sense, especially in an industry where margins are coming down and where there's increasing pressure in the consumer environment. I would imagine, or maybe I'm wrong, that that it's in operators' interest to do that, and they'll reach commercial agreements to do that. Or am I wrong? Are they so insistent on their own standards and their own way of doing things that they'll go out there and duplicate, for example, national fiber?
Absolutely. So the market is a great leveling, I suppose, instrument, and the market will sort itself out. We've seen that taking place more in the wireline industry at the moment, or wireline segment, in wireless to a limited extent. So what's been happening in the wireline environment is that as soon as anybody that had money and the license to deploy infrastructure could deploy infrastructure, many entities have started deploying it, but in different geographic areas. So they effectively carved out South Africa from a geographic perspective in order to limit duplication of infrastructure where it's not necessary, purely for out of a natural evolution of the market. They realized that it would be probably wasted money to put fiber where the fiber already went in from an infrastructure competitor. We are seeing elements of it. OpenServe, for instance, has been duplicating some fiber infrastructure in some places, but even OpenServe is now a lot more amenable to opening up its underlying infrastructure to retail service providers and to competitors to lease or swap elements of that infrastructure so that no duplication or limited duplication takes place. And that's been the prevailing, I think, mood within the wireline market. Try to not duplicate or duplicate only to a limited extent where you think there is room for a second operator, infrastructure operator coming in, and rather look at opening up the network to greater or lesser extent and generate revenue from wholesale services to your competitors at a retail level, but also, obviously generate revenue from a retail perspective. And what we also are seeing market stratification between wholesale operators who just still continue to offer wholesale services versus retail service providers who have invested to a very limited extent often or none at all in terms of basic infrastructure, but they go and buy capacity from a wholesaler to deliver the retail services. In the mobile space, we've seen operators going that way as well, but at the moment just on the basis of what's called passive infrastructure. So the actual towers, sites where radio equipment is located. We've seen coming from a historical environment where operators, Vodacom and MTN, just built completely separate infrastructures,
yes,
the towers, in order to compete with each other. Now they started to share because it brings additional revenue. It limits their capex that they need to spend on just building pylons everywhere to host the radio equipment.
Mm.
So generation of additional revenue and reduction of costs. We're starting to see, and globally it's already happening.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see it happen in South Africa as well, where we see increasing sharing of the active network, of the actual radio and the spectrum. And interestingly, the ICT white policy, the ICT policy white paper also introduces an element of spectrum sharing, where it would allow operators to almost sublease or onsell the spectrum that they have and that they may not be using or not using all of it, which is one of the positive elements that is a bit of a gray area currently. And to date, the market regulator, ICASA, has rather not condoned it. So, for instance, if I am a large mobile operator and I've got a certain block of spectrum that I have with my license, and I'm not using all of it or not using all of it in some geographic areas of the country, and there's a smaller ISP that wants to come and say, well, let me sublease that spectrum from you as an operator, and I will then deliver my services to this specific community. That would be allowed in the future under the new policy, which is a good development. It also creates more competition. And it proves that we are moving in that direction, and the market is also thinking of that and moving in that direction. So yes, mm-hmm. the market would provide for, I think, ultimately what the ICT policy paper is trying to force in a way that's probably not all that palatable to many market players and potentially has destructive elements as far as the market is concerned.
Right. I want to come back to mobile network operators, because particularly if you look at the big two in this market, Vodacom and MTN, I think it's a bit of a disparaging term that they referred to as vertically integrated operators, and that they want to do everything themselves or have historically looked to do that. But just in the last while, we've seen MTN announcing that they're going to build a platform for MVNOs, or mobile virtual network operators, on top of their network. Vodacom has hinted that they may look at doing the same. Cell C, of course, has been doing this for some time already. To what extent do you think that opening up their networks for MVNO type services goes? To what extent does that address government's concerns about opening up infrastructure, opening up their networks for greater competition? Do you think the MVNO model, which is what ICASA proposed in its plans to auction off spectrum, do you think that would address government's concerns here?
I think the reason probably the main reason they're doing it is because either way, whichever way the spectrum issue is resolved, will put them in a better position, I think, to continue participating in the market. So if we look at what ICASA proposed with auctioning of the spectrum before the government interdicted it and put a halt on it for the time being, is that it would the obligation would be on those who managed to buy that spectrum license to host MVNOs, namely Vodacom and MTN would be the main operators there. So I think that they're effectively trying to preempt that. If the issue is resolved the way the government wants it, i.e. there is no spectrum auction, the government retains all of the high-demand spectrum, I think it will also place both operators in a better light as far as the government's concerned in opening up the networks to additional competition. Now, it's not going to necessarily throw open the network to anybody that wants to come along, because there will be some sort of a vetting system in place and probably a limited number of MVNOs that they want to host on their networks, whereas the government wants a single national network open to anybody that's got effectively a services license to be able to provide those services using that network. So I think that's probably the main thrust, but I think also these two entities, Vodacom and MTN, are beginning to realize that possibly, you know, that the market has been moving in the direction of MVNOs. Some have been sort of looking like they may be successful. A lot of them are just too small to judge at this point in time, but it is another potential revenue source for them. So while they have possibly spare capacity on their networks in the spectrum that they currently have licensed, they may as well try and generate additional revenue in an environment where, as you indicated, margins are coming down. Mm. There's pressure on retail pricing, and increasingly operators need to continue decreasing costs and look for new revenue sources. And they're also looking at other adjacent markets outside of telecommunications per se. But MVNOs would provide additional revenue from wholesale. But I think the main objective there is to try and start positioning themselves as entities that are embracing this more open environment that mm-hmm. we're moving into, a more competitive environment with smaller players also participating.
Do you think they're being dragged kicking and screaming in that direction because they see what's coming? Or do you think they're doing this of their own volition, of their own free will?
As indicated, probably a combination of two, but probably more being dragged into that. And they see what's on their radar, what's looming over the horizon. So you might as well start taking early steps and prepare yourself for that.
Do you think the big operators misjudged the prevailing mood, the mood in government about them? Do you think they were taken by surprise by the level of antagonism that was coming from government towards their... and it's their term, duopoly. Do you think they misread it, misread the situation?
Quite possibly, although there are always in situations such as this, there are always negotiations behind the scenes and lobbying taking place. And this process has been going on for a few years now. So I think the operators were trying to lobby it more towards an auction process, particularly the large ones. Vodacom, MTN, Cell C may have been trying to lobby it more towards a non-auction because they don't necessarily want to spend billions, a few billions of rands in order to gain access to that high-demand spectrum. Telkom probably also doesn't want to spend that type of money and may not have that type of money at the moment to spend. So... there certainly has been, I think, discussions and lobbying taking place behind the scenes, but it does look as if the large operators, Vodacom, MTN, do not quite expect the final version of the proposed ICT policy, the white paper, to be as dramatic a departure from the model we are have currently as it is.
Okay. Dobek, I wanted to ask you briefly about international examples. The government has repeatedly referred to Mexico and to Rwanda as examples of countries that we're following. Yes. But my understanding is that the model that's being proposed here certainly doesn't square with what's happened in Mexico. Have you had a chance to look at the Mexican market specifically and compared what they're doing here to what the government is proposing here in South Africa?
Yeah, so what's the problem, and it's one of the main problems with the proposed wireless open access network, national network, is that there is no example that has been clearly implemented of such a network globally, which makes it very tricky because it means we will be the guinea pigs, and in case things go wrong, we quickly end up being on the bleeding edge and we lose time if it's a failure, and we lose a lot of money in the process, and to recover from that would be probably very difficult.
So it's huge risk.
A huge risk. The examples that the government quotes are not quite along the same lines of what we have proposed in South Africa. And I think a specificity of South Africa, and maybe similar to Mexico in that sense, is just the sheer size of South Africa, but also areas that are relatively sparsely populated. So we need to cover a large area. A lot of that area doesn't really have high population penetration levels. And where it does, most of the population is of lower income, lower disposable income. Groups cannot spend a lot on services. So to build a network and have it pay for itself, be profitable, is going to be tricky from that perspective. In the case of Mexico, what Mexico tried to do is break the monopoly of Telmex, the main mobile operator in that market, which accounted for over 70% of market share. On the basis of subscribers and I think revenue as well. So it wasn't a healthy environment. It effectively dictated almost what happens in that market. So what Mexican government decided to do is force two smaller competitors into merging to create a bigger entity in order to be more competitive against the incumbent Telmex and create in parallel a national wholesale wireless network that would offer the ability to, for anyone else to compete who has a license but is unable from a financial perspective to build own infrastructure. So effectively you end up with three entities. One is Telmex, the incumbent, still operating. The other one is the combination of the competitors, which is now a bigger commercial venture, and then the government-owned wireless national network that allows anybody else to ride on that network to compete against the two larger operators. So effectively we've got three of these entities in the market, three 4G infrastructures going forward. Also, there were only two competitors that ultimately ended up bidding to build that infrastructure, and one failed or was disqualified by the government. So effectively, government ended up with one bidder, and I don't know whether the bidder has the credentials ultimately to, or may have the credentials, but the capability to build the required infrastructure and operate it. But that process of adjudication has only been concluded recently. They still need to build that network and see how it, in practicality, how it performs. So that whole venture effectively is still ahead of the Mexicans. So there's no example there of how the network will behave. In Rwanda, what the government decided to do is bring in Korea Telecom from South Korea, create a separate company where the South Korean Koreans have a 51% interest. The government of Rwanda has 49% interest. So effectively, controlling stake is owned by the Koreans from a shareholding perspective. And then that would be a single national network built and operated by Korea Telecom, which would compete against effectively a 3G network operated by MTN as the main operator in that market. What apparently has been happening is that because the 4G, national 4G network is a monopoly network, it dictates the prices in order to generate a quicker return on investment, wholesale prices. So we've heard that wholesale pricing of that network to service providers who want to use that network is higher than retail 3G services offered by MTN to the end users in that market, to the consumers. So that the pricing is from that network, from that wholesale network, 4G network, certainly not meeting, I think, the expectations of the government in terms of providing a lower cost network, which could then be used by competitors to MTN in order to deliver retail services. The cost base makes them uncompetitive at this time. Countries such as Russia have discussed a wholesale network of this nature, but haven't made any progress there. Kenya looked at that quite intensely a couple of years ago, but ultimately Safaricom, the main competitor and largest operator in the market, ended up getting 4G spectrum from the market regulator. So if they bring in a national network, effectively it will be on the back foot, probably similar to Mexico, where some smaller service providers will be using it, but not the large operators like Safaricom, who already have started to build their own 4G network. So yeah, that's the challenge that we're facing in South Africa. There is no clear example of such an infrastructure, and the couple of examples that we do have to date are inconclusive in terms of its success. So we're effectively heading into a big unknown void.
And if this doesn't work, it's going to harm the economy quite severely, isn't it?
Oh, well, precisely. Also, as we discussed, number one, you're putting a lot of money into this undertaking, and if it turns out to be a dodo, well, you've sunk a lot of money that it's difficult to recover for the government and also for the operators that may co-finance this network. That's number one aspect, direct misspent funds or wrong allocation of funds for future development. The second aspect is that if it fails, there have been studies undertaken globally by the World Bank and other institutions and IMF that correlate economic development and broadband penetration in the country. So effectively, the better broadband services we have used by more people within our population, by more businesses, make us more competitive, make within South Africa and globally, make us integrate us further into the global economy, and effectively allow us to grow the economy, to be more successful as businesses and as individuals participating in the economy. And if we cannot provide that because we've made wrong choices in terms of the technological and the commercial model, then we effectively are retarding quite possibly our economic development, our economic growth, and it will just compound the fact that we're already experiencing very low growth of the economy, and the forecast over the next few years is continued low growth, and we're forecast is 1.5%, whereas our competitors are often growing a few percent a year, and that's where we should be as well. If we now disadvantage that by not expediting economic growth or even retarding it further, then yeah, it's not going to certainly be advantageous to South Africa as an Inc.
Very worrying. Dobek, I know we're basically out of time, but before I let you go, I think we do have to touch on the issue of network neutrality because it's covered in quite some detail in the white paper. You've gone through that section of the white paper. Net neutrality, wherever it's been imposed, has been controversial. I mean, we've seen all the debate that's come out of the United States, out of Europe on this particular issue. So government is proposing implementing network neutrality in South Africa. Do we need it at this time? And what are these regulations? What does the white paper say on the subject specifically?
So, you know, it's been a debated topic, and as you said, also in markets such as US, the European Union markets, we probably need more regulation around how traffic is shaped and prioritized by those who own the internet infrastructure, the networks, in order not to disadvantage smaller ISPs. Number one, smaller ISPs competitors who also use that infrastructure, and also probably to provide better quality of service, better user experience to those users in the market who use so-called best effort services. So probably some regulation, but also active monitoring and enforcement needs to take place in order to create a more competitive environment for all the service providers involved, and also maybe better user experience for some of the segments that use broadband to access the internet for other data services. What the white paper is currently proposing is absolute net neutrality, which means that whoever owns infrastructure that forms part of our access to the internet, part of the internet in South Africa and access to the global internet through submarine cables, will have absolutely no control in terms of shaping traffic or determining how the traffic is transported from the end user to whatever they want to access globally on the internet, that end user. So again, it means that there are entities in South Africa that have committed a lot of capital and continue to commit a lot of capital into infrastructure build-out, internet infrastructure, that would have very little control on how that infrastructure is used, and that may dissuade them from committing that same type of or continuing to commit investment in improving that infrastructure, building it out so that it reaches more and more people, more and more businesses. What probably is a more preferred, certainly I think from our point of view, a more preferred approach is to allow some sort of traffic shaping, which would then translate into services, end-user retail services that are structured in terms of various gradients of quality, and that's attached to different pricing. So if I want very good high quality, high definition voice services where it's crystal clear over the internet, over data transport networks, I'm prepared to pay more for it. So if I'm a big business and I want to make sure that my voice services are perfect, I'm prepared to pay more in order to have more bandwidth allocated to that service. And I'm paying for it, versus somebody that's staying at home and wants to use VoIP or Skype services and wants to pay as little for it as possible and doesn't mind if there's some crackling noise on the line or they fail to hear every 20th word goes missing somewhere in the internet. And they're happy if they only pay a minimal amount for that. You know, they pay 50 bucks a month or 100 rands a month, phone as much as you want, but be prepared to make some sacrifices. They don't want to pay 500 rands a month and have a good quality, just about faultless, you know, some faults experience. And then on the other hand, that large company also doesn't want to pay 500 rands a month in order not to have less than perfect quality service, voice service. They're prepared to pay, you know, 3,000, 5,000 rands a month to make sure that they get what they want. And that allows for competition again at the service level and quality level and differentiation in products and services, which is healthy for competition, because it allows you to develop different products to suit different customer groups. If we just make it all even, then it effectively eliminates competition in terms of network-based or infrastructure-based quality. So my competition now will be limited to the call center. How quickly can my call center agents help my client who cannot connect to the internet, for instance, for whatever reason, or to resolve certain other problems, but not quality of the service itself when it comes to when the quality is determined by the infrastructure, because all traffic for all applications, all services would be treated equally. So whether it results in good quality service or poor quality service, well, it's the luck of the draw. Because bandwidth and, let's say, the internet connectivity, the capacity that people use to access the internet is finite. It's not infinite. You can't have everything perfect, because it needs to be built, and you build it by investing into that infrastructure. So there can be a lot of it, but it's not infinite. And that determines ultimately the quality of all the applications. So unless you shape it to some degree and structure that traffic, make some applications more important than others, then you'll have sort of everything being transmitted at the same level, which may not be satisfactory to everyone. It will never be, I suppose, completely satisfactory to everyone, but some sort of a differentiation is probably the preferred model. At the moment, the ICT policy that's proposed would have everything treated as bland, equal. There is no differentiation. So Europe did that. So European Union started off at that premise a couple of years ago. It looked like this was the way they were going. More recently, towards the end of last year, they started moving on the regulatory side and government side. They started moving towards some sort of a model where there will be traffic shaping or some differentiation taking place. It won't be a complete net neutrality because of these reasons.
So, I mean, it sounds like the government comes up with these ideas because they sound like they'll be good for the consumer at the end of the day. But in reality, in practice, once you impose these regulations, they could have unintended consequences.
Exactly.
And consumers could end up hurting from it.
Precisely. And I think it boils down to the point of, it's great to have this almost utopian view of ubiquitous, high-quality service provision to everyone, everywhere. But what it boils down to is money. Somebody needs to put money in the ground or in the air in order to provide that infrastructure and then provide those services on top of the infrastructure and manage them appropriately. And number one, where is the money going to come from? And once you have the money, most of the money will probably come from the private sector. Those entities that put up that money want some sort of return on that money because they're not charity organizations. And yeah, the government can fund all of it if it could. But I think even in developed markets, it's extremely difficult for the rich countries in the world, extremely difficult for the government to fund everything and provide absolutely high quality services to everyone in the country. It needs to rationalize its expenditure as well. And all of that money ultimately boils down to predominantly money from the taxpayer. The individual taxpayer and the corporate taxpayer. Now, you can tax those to death, but then you run into other problems. Or if you try to tax too much, then obviously the reverse side of that is people start trying to avoid tax or look at different jurisdictions to immigrate to where tax levels are lower.
Great. We have run out of time, unfortunately, Dibek. I think we could sit here and talk all afternoon about this white paper. But just in closing, just your last thoughts. There's clearly huge disagreement between the industry and government over this white paper. The threats behind the scenes, certainly, of taking this white paper to court and challenging it in the courts, which seems inevitable unless there's some sort of compromise. How do you see this all panning out? Do you think it's inevitable that the courts are going to decide on this, or do you think that we're going to have months, if not years, of intense negotiations between the industry and the government, and we may see something completely different coming out maybe a year or two from now?
So our view is that there should be negotiation taking place. I think the government is, number one, it's in a strong position of almost being able to dictate to the market what happens in certain instances, such as the spectrum. They can just say, no, we're withholding it, not distributing it, which obviously would be to the detriment of the country also. But the government is in a strong position. I think the operators cannot force their will on the government, but they need to try and engage the government into dialogue and seeing how that the current policy that's proposed can be diluted or modified in order to be more equitable to both sides, the government side and their, what their aims are and what they want to achieve, and the commercial sector. And that's our advice, really. I think the operators are not in a position to dictate to the government what the future competitive environment should look like, the ICT sector in South Africa. They need to engage the government, but they are in a sufficiently, I think, strong position to be able to discuss it with the government, mm-hmm. with the Department of Telecoms and Postal Services and other. But based on the government's latest utterances, the fear on my side is that the government may try to stick to this as a definitive white paper policy that, that will be implemented. And then I think then we'll go the legal route, mm. which will be protracted. And mm. then we're looking at probably at years rather than months of negotiations, mm. looking at a few years of this aspect being tied up in courts back and forth, which obviously would be even more detrimental to the country.
Yes, yes. And of course, there's the whole ICASA court case with the minister, which is still going to be fought. If ICASA wins that, it could turn this whole thing on its head, right?
Precisely. So I think that's the first determining factor. Mm. If ICASA is allowed to go with the go ahead with the auction that they intended to do end of last year, early this year,
mm.
and it still decides to do so if they win the court case, mm. Then there would be a moot point, I suppose, because the whole ICT policy would have, or large chunks of it would have been effectively then destroyed mm. Or overtaken by market developments. Mm. And then the government will probably do its utmost to try and stop it.
Supreme Court of Appeal.
To an acrimonious relationship between the government and the market regulator, which...
Which you really don't want, right?
Which you don't want.
Mm. Mm. Well, you couldn't have a worse situation than that. Yep. Anyway, Dobek, thank you so much for this brilliant discussion on the white paper. I'm sure there's going to be much more to talk about as this process unfolds, as we get closer to that court case, particularly if there's no out-of-court settlement. Mm-hmm. If listeners to this podcast are interested in finding out more about your research on the white paper and your research more broadly, I presume that there's a lot of detail available on your website?
We publish various articles on the website. It's www.africaanalysis.co.za.
Great. Dobek, thank you. That was a fascinating insight. And I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast has learned a great deal today about just how complex this process is and how fraught with danger it is as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pleasure.